Welcome to Short Hops, powered by RotoWire.com. Derek Van Riper here, as always, with Bernie Pleskov. And surprise, surprise, we're talking about the San Diego Padres again as we get started with this week's episode. Bernie, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm great, Derek. And I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to seeing those revitalized, renewed Padres in spring training in 2 weeks.
Yeah, a team that ordinarily doesn't get that much attention during spring training, other than having some job battles. Now you've got a high-priced free agent in James Shields going relatively close to home in Southern California and really adding a presence to the front of this rotation that is much needed. They've had a lot of injuries to their pitching staff over the last few years. If they can get Shields to stay healthy for the bulk of that contract, that alone should be worth quite a bit of value to San Diego.
Well, you know, he's an innings eater. There's no question, and he's got great stuff. I like it for lots of reasons. I think he's going to be a terrific mentor to those younger pitchers. He's going to give the Padres innings. He's in a great home park for his pitching. And you know what? They're a team on the move. They'll score some runs for him. He faces one less hitter every game, except for the interleague play. Although that can work against you, too. You may not get as many runs on your side, but I think you'd rather face one fewer guy without the DH. It's a good move for him. It was thought out. You know, he took his time. He got what he wanted. I'm happy for everyone.
Yeah, you look at the track record here. The biggest concern I have skills-wise is that the strikeout rate has been down each of the last two seasons. There's only two seasons pitched for the Royals. Strikeout rate below 8 strikeouts per 9. But last year, the control got better. If he can continue to not walk that many guys, I think that actually helps him quite a bit as he moves into the back half of his career. But pitching in Petco, obviously good for any pitcher, especially for a guy that has some fly ball tendencies, as Shields does. I am curious to see what happens, though, because last year and in 2013, his numbers in Kansas City were not as good as his numbers on the road. And Kansas City is actually a pretty good place to pitch as far as the pitcher-friendly environments in the American League go.
Yeah, and there's another concern, Derek, and that's the defense. The infield defense is not great. The outfield defense is not great. This is a team that wants to slug their way to victories because they were never able to do that in the past, but I think they've sacrificed some defense, and I think Shields is the type of pitcher who will, like you said, pitch to contact. The ball's going to be in play. It's a big, big park. You need some speed in the outfield. We'll see. But I still, overall, I think it's a good move.
Looking at their rotation now, you've got Shields at the top. Obviously, it's Andrew Kashner, Tyson Ross, Ian Kennedy in some order, 2 through 4. Now you have a competition for the fifth starter spot. Brandon Morrow, Odrysamer Despaigne. Could be Robbie Erlend, possibly adding the left-handed presence to this Padres rotation. Maybe it's a guy like Corey Lupke if he can make it back from his second Tommy John surgery. Maybe it's one of the other young guys. Matt Whistler could end up being a candidate for that spot at some point. Casey Kelly, if he can stay healthy, or maybe even Josh Johnson. They've got a cast of characters battling for the fifth spot now. But are they done? Are you convinced that the Padres are done making moves at this point? Are they going to be happy with Will Myers as their center fielder? Are they okay with Yonder Alonso as their first baseman? Or do you think there's still yet another trade possibly on the horizon for the Padres?
I think there's maybe one or maybe even two more deals on the horizon. You just listed a great number of starting pitchers that could pitch in the big leagues. You probably ticked off 5 or 6 of them that will fight for the number 5 spot in their rotation. They'll need 8. They probably got 10 to 12. 2 could be expendable. Lupke's a question mark. Johnson's a question mark, but there are clubs out there that would love both of those guys. Now, what do they need? They need infield defense, and they could be in the Moncada sweepstakes. They could be in the Cole Hamels sweepstakes. Who knows? I don't put anything past them at this point. We got a long way to go to opening day. I don't think they're done.
I wonder if they match up with the Phillies on a Cole Hamels trade, which I think would really go kind of put them over the top, if they could also find a way to convince Chase Utley that he should come finish his career in San Diego, because you could move Jed Jerko to third base. That's where he started playing in the minor leagues anyway. You put Utley at second. It gives you another left-handed bat to a lineup that's very right-handed. And having Hamels at the front of the rotation bumps everybody down again. But then you might have the best rotation in the National League, or at least you certainly have an argument as the Padres being one of those teams. The package of players you have to give up, though, to get Hamels. I mean, think about the package of players. If it's Hamels and Utley, you're talking about three, probably four prospects, maybe even one more guy on top of that.
Yeah, but if you look at the outfield depth they have, you know, Liriano is hanging around there. There's no chance he's going to break into that lineup. Maben is still there. I mean, they probably have five or six guys that will fight for an outfield spot. And what are you going to do with the rest? I don't know what's going to happen to that outfield depth and that pitching depth. So that's what they package to get infield help. Maybe, you know, maybe Utley. I don't know if they can afford him. Or definitely Hamels. So that's why I don't think they're done. They have too much outfield depth, like Boston, and they have too much pitching depth, which is a great thing to have, but they're also great chips.
I had never really thought about this before, but what about Carlos Quinton as a first baseman? Take some of the wear and tear off of his legs, get him out of left field. I know a lot of people say he's a DH, he's going to get traded to the American League, and to me that's probably one of the most likely scenarios, but what if the Padres give him some reps at first base and see if he can possibly be a solution at that position for them?
I think that's a good thought. It all depends on whether he can master the footwork there, which I think he can because he's an athlete. Will he stay healthy is the bigger question. I'm not sure they're happy with Alonso. Yes, you're right. But they also have depth there as well. So, again, this is a club that we have to keep our eye on every single day because they are really exciting.
Yeah, I think they do have the pieces to go get Hamels if that's something they want to do. Financially, taking on his contract after signing Shields is another big commitment. We'll see if they're willing to make that. I want to talk about a couple of injury updates here from the last week or so, Bernie. We found out this morning Jonathan Lucroy is going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. Suffered a hamstring injury, and it sounds like it's an issue with the tendon. He's already received some treatment, a platelet-rich plasma injection to begin the healing process. The Brewers are currently optimistic that Lucroy will be ready for opening day, but I kind of worry about an injury of this nature because even if he gets back in early April, can he take on his typical workload behind the plate without being prone to aggravating that injury at some point?
It's at the top of the hamstring, and it gives me great pause. I was very upset when I heard about it because he's a terrific player. Hamstrings are scary because they can linger on and on. Look at what happened to Michael Bourne last year, for example. You know, he got better, supposedly, came back too soon, went out again, and he was never the same. You know, Lucroy is not a guy that depends totally on his running, but the legs have to work behind the plate or at first base. This is a significant injury, and we really have to be very cautious about it. Derek, I'm taking him off my draft board.
I've moved him down quite a bit to the point where I probably won't get him. I mean, I always make sure I have a price for every player that I am willing to pay, but he went from being the clear-cut number two catcher, a guy that was probably 20 spots overall behind Buster Posey, to a player who's more like 40 spots behind him now. I think somebody else will feel comfortable enough with the idea that he'll be back around opening day, if not on opening day. So I'll probably miss out on Lucroy as a result of this injury, but it's the kind of thing that even for a guy who doesn't lean that much on his speed, he's actually a decent base runner for a catcher. He could hurt himself that way. He could hurt himself squatting. He could have to play through it, and his base might not be right when he's hitting. It just seems like the kind of thing that is easy to write off, but Bourne's a good example. Even though he's a different type of player, it's just a reminder that injuries like this can linger on for quite some time. And that 4 to 6 week timetable, that's a more severe strain. That's not the grade one strain that sometimes puts a guy on the 15-day DL just for that 2 week minimum. This is something quite a bit more than that. So I'm really curious to see if he can avoid having setbacks once he gets back at some point in April. But this Lucroy injury news followed some news late last week that Victor Martinez needed knee surgery. He did have that surgery on Tuesday, and the Tigers actually are pretty optimistic post-surgery that he's only going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. He should be able to resume full activity within that time frame. But given Martinez's past history of knee injuries, are you giving him the Lucroy treatment? Are you bumping him down so much on your list that you're probably not going to have him on your teams?
No, for two reasons. First of all, well, for one reason only, and that's because he's a DH. He doesn't have to squat. He doesn't have to stretch. All he has to do is hit and run, which is a lot, and you rely on your legs. But let me just say this. This is the same knee for Martinez that he just had operated on 2 years ago. That gives me pause. But I think, and by the way, 4 to 6 weeks means what? It means no spring training. So if it's 6 weeks, is that 6 weeks of no activity, or is that 6 weeks including some time during spring? I think it's no activity. That means that it's more like 8 weeks to 10 weeks for me to be realistic. 8 weeks to 10 weeks is a month of the season. I would look at Martinez, but he certainly goes down on my list, and Luke Crowley comes off my list because he is a catcher first baseman.
Yeah, I think the Tigers had suggested the possibility that in early interleague series, Martinez might have been an option behind the plate. That was before this latest issue with his knee. I think that's been put on hold indefinitely. We may never see Victor Martinez catch again at this point, given that he's already 36 years old and the Tigers have been kind of trending away from that over the last couple of seasons. Anyway, now, as you look at other injured players, sometimes you can find value with guys coming back from injuries, but is there anybody else who's dealing with an ailment right now or coming back from an injury from a year ago who you've pretty much crossed off your list or dropped to the point where somebody else in the room is going to end up with that guy instead of you? Who's on that list of players that got significant downgrades because of health?
First one for me is Jason Kipnis for two reasons. One is the hand, the thumb. The other is his core from last year. I'm not sure he's 100% recovered from that yet because of the weight he had put on. We talked about it before. I'm really downgrading Kipnis because his hands have to work for him to work. So I'm a little bit concerned about that injury that he had. I'll wait and see. But the other one that I will not touch, he's electricity to me. I won't touch him, and that's Josh Hamilton. I think he's going to be back on the DL over and over again. That's different for me than Tulo and Cargo. Josh Hamilton is really messed up for physically for me. I'm staying away.
Yeah, Hamilton, I think, is at this point, I mean, even the last two seasons when he's been on the field, has not hit anywhere close to the levels he was hitting at during his time in Texas. That already drove the price down. This latest shoulder injury has buried him even further on the ADP reports that I've seen recently. I think for me, one guy that I'm really scared to have even in the middle and late rounds is Brandon Moss. I mean, he's coming off major hip surgery. I think things are a little more crowded in Cleveland on the corners than you might think. I think Nick Swisher, if he's healthy, could still be in the mix there to compete for playing time. They got a few other options to rotate through first base and DH. And I mean, I think Moss is a candidate to be strictly platooned anyway, but that's nothing new. I just wonder if it's going to take him some time to regain the power that he had, you know, prior to the second half of last season. I liked Moss a lot prior to this injury, but I think in 2015, he's someone I'm staying away from.
That's funny because I'm not scared off by him, and I want to see him in spring training. He's on the list of guys that I really have to take a good long look at. But right now, for me, Moss is on my could be a sleeper list.
The other guy that I'm definitely just afraid of is Masahiro Tanaka. I have no idea where I want to draft him. I don't. There's got to be a point where I see him out there, and even if he only gives me five starts before he needs Tommy John surgery, it's worth it to just take the chance because he pitched so well last year. In more than a strikeout per inning, an ERA at 2.77, a 1.06 whip. I don't believe in rehabbing without surgery when it comes to a tear in the UCL. I feel like he's going to have Tommy John surgery. It's just only a matter of time. And yet, for now, he's going to progress through and try to be ready to go when the season begins. I mean, is there any point where you're comfortable taking Tanaka, even if he falls outside the top 150 or outside the top 200 overall?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. You're going to sit there and you're going to hope he gets through several starts and you can get those wins. Look, I'm going to say this. When I saw this guy pitch, I don't remember a ball dropping off the table so quickly and so far and so well as when Tanaka pitched. This guy has such great sink on the ball. Maybe that'll be impacted by his physicality. I'm concerned, no doubt about it, and he's dropped on my list. But boy, if he's there for me at a lower round, I have to grab him. just to get those first few wins.
I mean, looking at the NFBC ADP reports, I've seen him going around 134 overall, which those are 15-team mixed leagues. So that's a ninth-round pick, like, for a guy that has arguably top 10 pitcher skills. I mean, like, he could be that good with health. I think that's late enough to where I would think about it, but it would depend on what I'd already drafted in those first eight rounds if I was going to actually take the risk. But so far, I've not ended up with him in any mocks, and I had a really difficult time ranking him for my top 350 overall.
I understand, and that's what scares me about the Yankees. It's not just him. It's Pineda. It's CeCe. I mean, they're all question marks for me. Who are they?
Yeah, definitely a valid concern. And if they have any injuries, I don't even know who they have depth-wise that could step in and chew up innings effectively. I think that's a major concern. It's a big part of the reason why I thought the Yankees were going to be that team that signed James Shields. But surprisingly, it was San Diego. I mean, once Boston said they were out, I thought, okay, Yankees or Tigers, that's where you go. Maybe the Blue Jays. But San Diego came through and ended up getting the last starting pitcher on the board. All right, let's talk about some outfield rankings here, Bernie. As I alluded to, I did the top 350 overall for the site this week. It's going to come out later this week. It's called the RotoWire Roundtable Rankings. But as a part of that, I've got a top 25 set of outfielders. We're going to talk sleepers. We're going to talk busts as well. But as we have done for the last couple of weeks, going over relievers and starting pitchers, we're going to work our way from the bottom up to number one as we go through our outfield rankings, starting at number 25, Bernie, who is your 25th ranked outfielder for 2015?
Well, I actually only did 20, so if we could start at 20, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm sorry, DVR, I only did 20. My number 20 is Starling Marte, the Pirates left fielder. Again, there were health issues last year with him. I don't mean again for him, but another guy with health issues. But again, if he's healthy, this is a guy that can run, he can hit, he can play well. Marte is my number 20.
By the way, I just want to preface these rankings again by saying we don't exchange lists before the podcast. My list isn't published anywhere right now. So when we match up on players, that's completely independent of knowing what the other person did. I've also got Marte at 20. There's kind of a tier break right around where Marte is for me. I've got a handful of other young outfielders I like just as much, but the speed he brings to the table, I think there's a good chance he ends up back in the leadoff spot. And part of that is I don't really believe in Josh Harrison as that team's best option in that spot. So if Marte ends up leading off again, I think you're talking about a lot of runs scored with those players around him.
I like him a lot. At 19, I've got the Rockies' Corey Dickerson. He could have gone higher for me, but I want to see what he did last year again. But he's good enough for me to take off the board early, and that's at 19.
Yeah, I've got a slightly different option at 19. It's another Rockies outfielder. It's Carlos Gonzalez. I don't think he's going to fall far enough for me to get him. He's about 60th overall in my rankings right now. This is a guy that has first-round talent, but he has 15th round health. I mean, that's the only way to look at him at this point. I want to see him stay healthy because the things he could do in that park, playing 140 or 145 games, would make him an absolute steal where he's been going so far. But you just don't know what you're going to get from Cargo at this point. And I think the Rockies are going to have to play him in a corner too. He can't really play center field given the wear and tear that he's put on his legs recently. So I think from a real life standpoint, he gets a slight bump down playing a corner versus playing center. But ultimately, it's just I don't want to deal with that much risk in the early part of my draft. So he has to fall that far for me to take the chance on him.
I've got him at 14 because I still love the talent. I'm going to hope that he's healthy. Not sure he is, but right now I've got him at 14 on my list with Dickerson at 19. Did Dickerson make your 20?
Dickerson's up a little higher on my list. He's at 13, so he's definitely in there. I really believe in what he did.
We switched our guys. That's what we did.
Basically, yeah. I mean, that's what it came down to. So Marte, both at 20. I have Dickerson at 19. You've got Cargo. Or should I say, you have Dickerson at 19. I have Cargo at 19. Moving up to 18, I've got George Springer in that spot. I think the power last year he showed is legit. I think there's a lot of swing and miss in his game. I've compared him to a young Chris Young in terms of what he brings with a combination of power and speed and swing and miss. I think there might be a little bit more hope for Springer as a hitter, as someone that can use the entire field more effectively than Young. But I still think, even long term, I don't know if Springer's going to be much more than a 255, 260 hitter. And I think this year I'm looking for more like 240 or 245 from him in the batting average category.
You're not going to believe it, but that's where I have Springer, strictly for the home runs. This guy is going to hit some home runs, and he's going to hit them a long, long way. He's going to strike out a lot. Be prepared for that. And if your league punish you for strikeouts, you know, you got to look at Chris Carter and George Springer very carefully. But the upside for Springer, he's another year more mature. This guy is going to be a top 10 hitter by next year. Right now, he's my 18.
Yeah, it seems like a guy you're going to want to have shares of if you can afford that little bit of a batting average hit in the early rounds of your offensive lineup construction. I want to talk about Matt Holliday. I've got Holliday at 17. Boring player for a lot of reasons. He's aging. The power is gradually tapering off. Although last year, he had the longest average home run and fly ball distance in baseball. So I think the power, the raw power, is actually still there. You do worry about injuries catching up to him, but in terms of being a guy that can get you a lot of RBIs, decent number of home runs, plenty of runs scored, and hit for a good average, you're talking about a very solid four-category player in a strong St. Louis lineup. I like Holliday quite a bit as someone that's a little bit undervalued in some of my drafts.
Well, I undervalued him because he didn't make my top 20. I thought long and hard about him. This is the year that we're going to separate. It's not a divorce. It's a trial separation. We're going to see if we can get along. And if we can't get along, it'll be a divorce. But right now, he's going to go his way. I'm going to go my way. And I'm going with Marcell Ozuna at 17.
Yeah, Ozuna fell just outside my top 20. He got 24 for me. So he's there. I mean, he's in the conversation. Ozuna has a lot of raw power. What do you think Ozuna's short-term and long-term power ceiling is? I mean, could you see him hitting 30 home runs this year and maybe being a guy that could hit 40 at some point down the road?
No, I see 25 and 30.
Okay.
I think it's a little bit of a tough place. I think 25 and 30 is more realistic. I'll take either of those numbers, though. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to move up to number 16 here. I've got a guy who I think makes some pretty cool YouTube videos. Yoenis Cespedes is my 16th ranked outfielder. Like him in that lineup. I know we talked about Victor Martinez possibly missing some time. You got Miguel Cabrera coming off the foot issue. But at some point when that Tigers lineup is healthy, this is a lineup that 1-6 is still really strong. Should put a ton of runs on the board. Cespedes will be a big part of that. I know the motivation seems to have tapered off a little bit since he arrived. But if there ever a time for him to focus and put together a big season, put in the extra time off the field, it's this season, because we're talking about a guy who's entering free agency this coming winter.
Yeah, he didn't make my top 20. He's in my top 25 for sure. Cespedes is going to really have to help the Tigers. A lot's going to depend on Victor Martinez about what kind of pitches these guys see, both Cabrera and Cespedes. So my jury is out, and Cespedes is in probably 24, 23. But at 16, I've got a guy that I'm sure you don't have in your top 20. He's a guy that I really love, and that's Lorenzo Cain. Listen, this guy is doing it all now. He's hitting for power. He's running. He's stealing bases. His batting average is good. Lorenzo Cain is still under the radar. As much as I talk about him for the last 2 years, now he is ranked in my top 20. He's number 16.
Yeah, Cain didn't make my top 20. I like him as an undervalued outfielder, but didn't check in that part of the rankings for me. 28 steals last year in 33 attempts, and I think you could see even more of a playing time bump this year, too.
Not bad, right?
He did it in 502 plate appearances. So if he gets another 50 or maybe even 100 plate appearances, which is possible if he gets higher up in the order, I think that's a chance of getting 30, 35 steals this year, because Ned Yost loves to give his base runners the green light. I think Cain, in many ways, could become sort of the AL answer to Denard Span. I think he's that kind of player. Maybe a little more pop from Cain, but I just don't know if I want to rely on him for home runs. Even though he can hit some, 5 last year, 4 in 2013, 7 in a half season back in 2012, I just worry that that's going to be a category where he falls a little short.
I think he's going to hit 10 or more, and the best is yet to come. At 15, I've got Justin Upton. And Justin Upton used to be a top five guy, then a top 10 guy. Now he's a top 15 guy for me. And next year, he may not even be in the top 20. There's something about Justin Upton. What we see is what we get. There's no upside left for me. And he's in a very tough ballpark now to hit the ball out. But when Justin hits him, I will say they go. So that shouldn't have more than maybe a 3 to 4 home run impact, but it will have an impact.
I think he's pretty stable at this point, though. Seems like he's leveled off as a 270 range hitter. Decent on base skills. 20 home run power seems safe, even with the move into Petco. Maybe it's more low 20s home runs instead of high 20s or low 30s, though, which is where the ceiling was prior to the trade to San Diego, especially for a right-handed hitter. San Diego's a difficult place to hit, so I am curious to see how he fares playing half his games there. Upton's a little higher, though, on my list still. I downgraded him slightly compared to what he was projected to earn last year. Definitely a case to be made for bumping him down in this spot. We're not that far off on him. I've got him up at 11. I've actually got Matt Kemp. I've got his teammate at 15. Similar concerns for a lot of reasons. Kemp's not going to steal bases the way he did earlier in his career. At least I'm not expecting him to. Also a right-handed hitter, now playing in San Diego. From June 1st on of last year, looked more like the Kemp we had seen before the ankle and hamstring injuries really slowed him down over the last 2 years or so with the Dodgers. So I think Kemp, I've got him a little bit behind Upton, but I still think there is some value there if he falls into that 40 to 45 range overall on draft day.
You know, I was the guy last year who said don't give up on Kemp, if you remember, in the second half. And I'm not giving up on him. I just am very, very curious to see if that's where he wants to play. A lot of Kemp's game is his desire to play and the guys around him, the clubhouse, the whole bit. My jury is out, and I'm not sure where I want to rank him, but I know today, before spring training, he's not in my top 20.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just one of those players, I think, for a lot of reasons, is tough to evaluate because of the different injuries he's had and the change of scenery. Certainly doesn't help in terms of the park factors when it comes to Matt Kemp. Let's move up to number 14. I've got Michael Brantley at 14, which means I'm probably not going to end up with Brantley in many places. And it doesn't mean that I don't like him. It just means I don't like him quite as much as everybody else likes him. The thing I like most about Brantley, he doesn't strike out. I mean, he just doesn't. He used the entire field more effectively last year, so I think a lot of the batting average gains are probably sustainable. I just don't know if that 20 home runs, if that's going to repeat. I'm thinking more like 15, 16 home runs, and then kind of like a high teens total in steals. A very good rotisserie player, but I think we're going to look back at Michael Brantley when his career is over 8, 10, 12 years from now, and we're going to look back and say 2014 was the best year of Michael Brantley's career, even if he has a lot of good seasons over the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, you're going to be waiting a while to hear my call on Brantley, okay? You're going to be waiting quite a while because I have him quite a bit higher than you. And maybe it's because I want it to happen. I think there's 5 more home runs in that bat. This guy is just amazing to me, but I'll talk about him later. 14 was Gonzalez for me. 13 is my guy, Christian Yelich. Well, every year he's going to get better and better and better. And I remember gushing about him to you. He has shown that he can be a 300 hitter. He's good at the top of the order. He runs. Everything about him, from the swing to his attitude, says to me, next year this guy's in my top 10. He's 3 off right now.
Yeah, I think Yelich was 21st on my list of outfielders, so the first guy who didn't participate in this part of my rankings. But looking at the thing that he did last year, he got on base at a good clip, didn't hit for a lot of power, and the lack of power, partially the result of just being young. I think he's very young for the level, but it's also the function of hitting a lot of ground balls. When you watch Yelich, do you see a swing that will eventually generate more loft and enable him to be a 15 to 21 home run hitter annually?
Yeah, I agree with the ground balls. I do agree with that, and I don't think he's going to change his swing, and I do think you're going to see the ground balls. However, he doesn't strike out a lot either. So, you know, there's a trade-off there. He does make contact. It's just that I think he's getting stronger and stronger and better and better. Who was your 13?
My 13 is Corey Dickerson. And the thing I like about Dickerson is that he handled lefties well enough to where I think there's a chance he'll get more playing time against them. If he struggles, they can platoon him. But playing half your games in Coors is a huge advantage. This is a guy that I wrestle with a little bit only because I'm not sure what the true power ceiling is. 24 home runs last year came in just 478 trips to the plate. So if he's playing even more this year, if he's getting up to that 550 range, maybe we're talking about high 20s in home runs. I think that's a possibility. Batting average actually seems reasonably stable. I think maybe he's closer to 280, 290 than the 300+, but being in Coors can really skew those numbers upward. I think you're going to get lots of runs driven in, plenty of runs scored, and he can chip in some steals too. I think there's quite a bit to like with Corey Dickerson, and admittedly a lot of that is based on the home park.
He wasn't on either of our top 20 last year, if I remember correctly.
No, he wasn't even close for me.
Yeah, he's definitely improved. Right.
He got optioned to AAA at the beginning of last year, Bernie.
Pardon?
They sent him down to AAA at the beginning of last year.
Yes, they did. They did. That's why it's a tremendous upgrade for him to make our top 20. Yours higher than mine, but I really like this guy. Plays at the greatest ballpark you can have. On a good team, he's a good player. My number 12 is Jacoby Ellsbury. I cannot get rid of him. He's, you know, just offers too much. Not in the top 10 anymore. The home runs drop, you know, considerably over time. But this is still a very good option.
I've got Ellsbury about five spots higher than that. I've got Hunter Pence at 12. I don't know why people don't like this guy more. All he does is hit, and he doesn't take days off. He's got power. He's got some speed. He scores runs. He drives in runs, and he's not a sinkhole in the batting average. He's a five-category player that people, for one reason or another, don't get that excited about. Almost like a younger version of Matt Holliday in that regard. I think Holliday's always hit for a better average than Pence, but just a guy that for some reason doesn't seem to get as much respect as he probably deserves from the fantasy community.
Well, he gets my respect, and I've always loved him, and you're going to have to wait a while to hear Pence's name from me, too.
Let's talk about number 11. That's where I had Justin Upton on my list. Who did you have at 11?
This is a huge drop for me this year. That's Yasiel Puig, the guy that I thought I may have picked number one last year. Puig is still intriguing to me. He's scary, but I'm not sure how he's going to deal with this new Dodgers wave of front office guys. This is a tremendous question mark. You know, what's going to happen to Yasiel Puig in the new administration? I still think he can hit. I think he's very dangerous. I think he can run, and he's my number 11 ranked player.
Yeah, I like Puig quite a bit. I've got him a couple spots higher, but the thing I like about him is that last year the plate discipline got better overall. He walked more and he struck out less. I know at the end of the season he was really struggling with the strikeouts, but the overall view is encouraging in that regard. This is a guy that can hit the ball all over the park. He hits the ball with authority. I think the BABIP has been high now for the year and two-thirds that he's been up, but I think that's actually pretty sustainable, so he's a good source of batting average. He can steal some bases. He actually wants to steal more bases this year, but I think he's going to become more selective, more efficient as a base stealer to get more green lights. If he hits near the top of the order in Los Angeles, you're going to get a lot of runs scored. You'll get a decent number of RBIs. The big question for me is the home run category. I know that Jeff's got him projected to be a low 20s home run guy. I know the Steamer projection system on Fangraphs has him at 22 home runs. How many home runs do you see Puig hitting in 2015?
I'm in the 20 to 22 range myself. I think it's a tougher park than people realize. The West has San Diego in it. It's also got Colorado and Arizona. So I think 20 to 22 to 23 makes sense. But it's the RBIs, the runs scored, the stolen bases. It's across the categories that puts Puig where it does for me. And 11's pretty good because my 10 I really like just missed it. Who's your number 10?
Yeah, 10. I've got Ryan Braun, and
me too.
That's
such, why I got Braun.
Braun, though, he's still one of those players that if you're up at the end of round two and you're looking at Braun versus maybe one of the top five or six starting pitchers, and the clock's ticking down, you still have this hesitation, because even though he's getting that treatment for his thumb with the cryotherapy and maybe he'll be healthy, and even though he looked like the Braun we're accustomed to for about 2 months last year before the injury came up, maybe, just maybe, he's going to go back to being something really close to the guy we're used to. But you still have those doubts. At least if you owned him last year, you probably do. And I know you and I exchanged trade proposals on Puig and Braun at least 3 times in the Stake League. There were at least 3 different times, and I think at least once you offered me Puig for Braun, at least twice I offered you Braun for Puig. We never actually agreed to a deal, but for some reason, and I think it's the health more than the PEDs, I still have that little bit of hesitation even when Braun's available where I want him.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you said. Puig and Braun, 11 and 10 for me. I mean, they're amazing. There are amazing similarities between these guys. They can both, if they are healthy and playing like they want to play and can play, Braun can take the ball all over the park too. I've seen him hit balls to right center. I've seen him hit balls to left field. Like you said on the radio today, if you bust him inside, what's going to happen? We don't know yet. But he's still a top 10 outfielder for us. And the outfield and third base are the two strongest positions in fantasy this year. And I'll tell you, Braun is going to surprise a lot of people because he's going to come back.
Going about 15 to 20 picks later than he was this time last year. So there is a discount compared to where he was a year ago as a result of that thumb injury that he suffered last season. As I mentioned before, I have Puig as my 9th ranked outfielder. Who do you have at 9, Bernie?
That is my guy, Bryce Harper. Watch out this year for Bryce Harper. You know, we've talked about him for 2 years now, maybe 3, I can't remember, about how he's going to get better and better and better. This year, he's going to get even better. Bryce Harper is a very dangerous guy with a bat in his hand because he knows how to use it. He knows what he's doing, and he wants to kill the opposition. Bryce Harper is my number 9, and I'm not surprised if he earns better than number 9 money. That's how good he is.
Yeah, I've got him at 8, so I think we're in pretty much agreement as far as what Harper is likely to do or potentially going to do here as we move into 2015. I think with Harper, some people might call it arrogance or cockiness and swagger, whatever word you want to use. I mean, they're all synonyms for confidence, and I think some of those words have more negative connotations than others. But the fact of the matter is, to me, this is a guy that every day when he wakes up, it has to bother him that Mike Trout is the megastar and Harper so far is considered the disappointment. that he strikes me as a guy that thinks about that and is motivated by that, and I like that about him.
I think you may be right about that. You very well may be right about that. But they're two different guys. They're two totally different players. But, you know, I see some similarities. But at the end of the day, Harper and Trout have different games. And I love them both, no doubt.
You know, with Harper's swing, too, I remember there was a piece in the Washington Post, I want to say it was last summer, maybe it was 2 summers ago, but it broke Harper's swing down. And the comparisons in terms of the force generated and the approach were actually kind of favorable to Babe Ruth, which was, it was a really interesting breakdown. If you Google Bryce Harper swing Washington Post, I think the article I'm referring to will come up. I just like watching him swing the bat because it's such an angry, violent swing, but he's actually able to repeat it pretty well.
Yeah, there's nothing calm about his game whatsoever. And I do think he's cocky, but I like that. I do think he's confident, and I like that. And I think the numbers are going to be outstanding. Where are you at number?
I'm on 8. I have Harper at 8, so who did you have at 8?
I have Adam Jones at 8, and I'm a little bit worried about that being too high. I want to see a complete season like we've seen. I want to see him do it again. Remember, I was with the Mariners when we traded him, and we all knew at that time, this is going to be a great player. He's a great player. But I'm worried about the Orioles, DVR. The protection that's not there. Cruz is gone. Markakis is gone. I think it's going to impact Adam Jones's game. I have him at 8. He could be lower. But for now, I want to see him, you know, be Adam Jones.
I've got Jones up at 6, so we're not far off. My concern is last year he wasn't as good against righties as he's been typically. He crushed lefties, and that made up for it. But What if he's more like the 2011 player? He hits 25 home runs instead of 29 or 33 like he's done the last 2 years. He didn't steal as many bases last season. That number got cut in half, went from 14 to 7. The counting stats are team dependent. He needs Chris Davis to bounce back. I think that's going to go a long way towards helping Jones, even with the loss of Cruz and Markakis. He needs a guy like J.J. Hardy to bounce back behind him to drive him in. There's a couple of players he's sort of dependent on. I think he's really stable in terms of batting average. He puts a good number of balls in play. He doesn't ever walk, which actually from a rotisserie standpoint, I think we've touched on it before, it's not a bad thing to not walk a lot. In a real-life baseball context, you want guys that get on base at a high clip. But in Jones's case, because he's putting so many more balls in play, he actually has a chance to get more runs driven in as a result of that low walk rate. But for me, even though he gets that safe label as a late first-round pick, I think there's a sneaky amount of risk here. And I can see myself on draft day talking myself into guys that I have ranked slightly behind him if all things are being equal. Exactly. So there's just something there that doesn't feel right. I think it's a mixture of all those things. It's the struggles against righties. It's the lack of stolen bases. It's the low walk rate. Even though that's not necessarily a horrible thing from a rotisserie standpoint, all those things together make me a little bit hesitant to build my team around Jones right now, even though he's a very good player.
See, and I agree with everything you said there, but that's why I preface this by saying I may have him ranked too high, but all my reasons are not the same as yours. I'm more worried about the team concept because I still love Camden Yards for his swing, but clearly Harper, Braun, and Puig, who I have right behind him, could surpass him without much trouble. So he could go anywhere from 8 to 11 or 12, you know, by the time the season starts.
Yeah.
Who do you have at number 7?
I've got Ellsbury up at 7. I think I'm higher on Ellsbury than most. That combination of power and speed that he offers is really hard to match. I mean, double-digit home runs and 35, 40 steals. I think the Yankees lineup could be a little better this year with some of the pieces they've added and with some health. So I think you talk about maybe more runs scored from him this year or more runs driven in, depending on where he hits in the order, but it seems like people just kind of write him off. And Ellsbury, he takes enough walks to get on base and uses speed, puts enough balls in play and drive in runs. I think he can do a little bit of everything still, even though he just turned 31 in September.
Good ball player, no doubt about it, but this is where I have Hunter Pence, right up at 7. There isn't a thing Hunter Pence can't do on the field. You illustrated it very well before. The only reason he isn't higher is because the Giants offense doesn't really excite me that much. But Hunter Pence, I don't know where they'd be without him. And I do know that the Yankees could go on without Ellsbury. So I dropped Ellsbury to 12, I believe, and now Pence is at 7 for me. Interchangeable parts, two very good ball players.
I think the Giants need Brandon Belt to take that big step forward and stay healthy this year. That's going to be huge for their offense as a whole, including Hunter Pence's run scored count. I think that is going to be really important for him now that Pablo Sandoval has moved on to Boston. I've got Adam Jones at 6, as I mentioned before. I think that's where he belongs because he's so consistent, but at the same time, you're only consistent until you're not. And I think this might be that year where Jones takes a step back, and maybe this time next year we're talking about him as a third, fourth, fifth round pick or something like that. And just the fact that I think that makes me not want to take him in round one.
Yeah, and this is where I have Jose Bautista at 6. I would not want to pitch to that lineup. I'll tell you right now. And I think Josh Donaldson is going to make these guys, Encarnacion and Bautista, even better. So I've got Bautista at 6. Still a lot of empty at-bats that concern me. But, man, when this guy hits the ball, he can get on fire. And I want to own him when he goes on fire.
Yeah, I think the injury issues he had in 2013, 2012 have really been put to rest. Walked at a higher clip than he struck out last year. It's something we've seen from his teammate, Edwin Encarnacion, at times. If you're in a league that rewards OBP, he definitely gets a bump there. But I think the batting average gains we saw from him last year might be somewhat sustainable. I looked more closely into some of Bautista's spray chart information. He moves the ball around a little bit. He was beating the shift at times last year. So I think if he can hold on to that as skills growth, he might not be as much of a liability in the batting average category as he was back in 2012 and 2013.
Yeah, I think he's improved markedly. And I, like I said, I think Donaldson's going to help him more. He's going to see more pitches. So I have him at six. Where do you have Bautista?
I got him at five. Who do you have at five?
At five is my guy, Michael Brantley. Now, I'm going to say this about Brantley. I think he's going to hit more than 20 home runs, believe it or not. He's got a great park from a left-handed hitter's standpoint to hit in. I think he's going to score runs, drive in runs. This is the calmest guy I've ever seen in a lineup. Nothing rattles him. I think the Indians' offense could be even a little bit better this year. I like Michael Brantley, and what we saw last year, to me, is just the tip of the iceberg, and I don't want somebody else pulling this guy off the board before me.
Yeah, I think I saw about 10 outfielders go ahead of him in the labor mixed draft last night. I think that's going to be typical of most drafts. So if you like him that much, I think you're going to probably have him on several teams this year because you're probably going to be willing to go that extra dollar or two in an auction, or you're going to be willing to go that extra round or round and a half to make sure he's on your roster. If you think he's going to hit 20-plus, that's where he belongs, at least based on the rest of his skill set. I think that's the tipping point for a lot of people is that power number and just not knowing what exactly to expect, because the breakout last year, there wasn't a lot that foreshadowed the power that he showed last year. The batting average surge, to me, not a surprise because he's always been good at making contact. Stolen bases have been pretty stable throughout his time as a pro, both lower levels of the minor leagues, upper levels, and in the big leagues. But yeah, I think Michael Brantley is a guy that you're going to see still fall a little further than maybe he should in some drafts. Moving up to number four, Bernie.
Let him fall. That's great.
Let's move up to number four. I've got Carlos Gomez at four. I don't know why it took everybody so long to get on board, myself included. I think maybe it's because when he first came up, he was a free swinger. He struck out a lot.
Nobody's slower than me.
Maybe not. I mean, maybe. But really, like at this point, you believe in him, right? Even though it's been really three good years now from Gomez, like you believe he belongs up here, right?
Derek, I can't believe I'm saying this. Carlos Gomez is my number four outfielder. Do you ever believe that I would say that? I mean, I've not been anti-Carlos Gomez. I've never been on the bandwagon, though, okay? This is the first year I look at this and I say, this guy is for real. And if Braun's there, oh, my goodness. And Ramirez is back hitting. This guy, the sky is the limit. He is my number four. And clearly, I had no personal debates with myself. You know, usually we talk a little. This Bernie talks to that Bernie, and he comes up with the answer. Not now. Carlos Gomez is in both Bernies. He's a four.
For anybody who got on board with him back in 2012, or especially in 2013 when the price was still pretty low coming off a good year in 2012 where he had 37 steals and 19 home runs. Kudos to you guys. I watched a lot of Carlos Gomez, but I always talked myself out of him. Last year I was on board. I thought he was pretty stable. I think I was still a little bit behind the curve. For some people who had him as a mid-first round pick last year, I thought he was more of a top 15, top 20 guy. But now I see it. I see the elite skills. He sustained the power and speed. He is in a good park and a good lineup. He's worked on walking more. We've seen the walk rate go up each of the last two seasons. I know that's easier to do when you start at a low walk rate, but he's showing some progress there. And this is a guy that used to be a liability in the batting average category who just isn't anymore. Back-to-back years where he's hit 284, and even in 2012, he hit 260, which in today's climate really isn't that bad. But I think he's going to continue to be that really strong five-category player we've seen for the last 2 years.
In a great hitter's park. And by the way, next year, Michael Brantley will be your and my Carlos Gomez. You know, you'll be saying the things about Brantley that I'm saying this year about Gomez. That could happen.
It's possible.
Who's at three? I think we're down to the same three guys, and I wonder if we're one, two, and three on them. I know we're the same on one. It's two and three that we may alter on. My three is Giancarlo.
Yeah, I got Stanton at three. The main, only real concern I've got here is he's coming off that facial fracture at the end of the season. And look, that's a minor issue for me because I think he'll be healed up and fine. You never know how a player is going to respond to something like that. I think the example I would point to is Jason Hayward. I mean, look at Jason Hayward's numbers since that incident where he got hit by John Neese. He hasn't really quite been the same player in that time after. I don't think that's going to be an issue for Stanton, but I needed a way to break the tie between Stanton and Andrew McCutchen in the two spot.
Well, he's my number three as well, and I used to worry, and I thought I was right, and the numbers proved me correct on that. I don't like to throw it up, but he needed protection, and he finally has that protection. Yelich is there. Ozuna's there. This guy, the sky is the limit for him. When he hits a home run, there are no doubters. I'm not worried about anything except his contract. I worry about what his contract's going to do to him, but I think he's such a great type of character that we don't have to worry. So Giancarlo Stanton is my number three. Kutch is my number two. And what a terrific ball player he is.
Yeah, I think the other thing with Stanton, to me, it's not as though I would expect him to loaf after getting a big deal. I expect him to be that type of player that maybe presses a little bit, tries to earn all $300 million in every swing. You know, like, I think that's more along the lines of what he is in terms of, you know, attitude, work ethic, yeah, whatever you want to call it. I think the difference for me, too, is that with McCutchen, you've got a little bit longer track record of stability where he's been a 300-plus hitter, a 400 OBP guy, and a 500 slugging guy. I think Stanton has as much power as anybody in the game. If you said, DVR, who's the most likely player to hit 60 home runs in a season again? It's Stanton. But at the same time, with Stanton, I do see a little bit of volatility still in the batting average category in particular. I think that was really the one category that I thought I was a little unsure of. Even though he hit 288 last year, I think you could see a little bit of a backslide in that category this season. And I also wonder if he can sustain the stolen bases. But McCutchen's my second-ranked outfielder. Again, the track record is outstanding. The Pirates lineup has gradually gotten a little bit better, too. I think that's really helped him stabilize his five-category production.
He is just so steady. You know, no matter what happens, this guy is going to produce for you. And that's what I like. Every year, year in and year out, the numbers are going to go on the board. He's still under the radar in a lot of people's minds. They don't think of him, but I'd love to have him anywhere I can get him. Andrew McCutchen is number two, which brings us to Mike Trout.
What else is there to say about Mike Trout? Like, I've run out of ways to describe how good he is at baseball.
Well, you want more stolen bases, don't you?
Yeah, I heard. Now, I think it was Todd Zola, who works for Masters Ball, ESPN, a couple other places. He emailed me about this when I was talking about it on XM one day. I don't remember seeing any stories about it, but it's definitely possible it's out there. I want to do some research. But apparently, Albert Pujols doesn't like to have players running in front of him on the base pass. Do you think that had anything to do, possibly, with Trout getting some red lights last year?
Yeah, sure it did. I didn't know that was true, but I can see that. You don't want the distraction out of your peripheral vision of having the guy move in front of you. Yeah, I get that. I've never heard that, but Todd could be onto something. And if he is, you know, that very good call, Todd Zola. I still think Trout's going to run, but maybe not as much as he did when he was a rookie. The guy is a terrific ball player. But terrific ball player, no doubt about it. Power, speed, RBIs, runs scored, everything you want.
What about the strikeout rate last year? There were some points in the summer, midseason, yeah, especially. People were harping about Trout having too many strikeouts. And you know, what do you think? I mean, this is a guy, as amazing as he's been, he's 23 years old. He could still get better. He's not necessarily a finished product yet.
Well, you know, he's a free swinger. He wants to hit those home runs. He is going to strike out. So is Giancarlo. Any guy, Pence is going to strike out. You're going to see these guys that have power and quick hands and great wrists. They are going to strike out. It's going to happen. You just have to realize that an out is an out. It's better than a double play. It's the only thing it's better than. And, you know, if he strikes out, he'll get him the next time.
Not surprisingly, though, Mike Trout atop the outfield rankings here again as we enter 2015. Now, Bernie, I want to talk about some sleepers and some busts. I'll throw out a few names of guys I like. You let me know if you think these guys could be nice values this year. I know you like Mookie Betts. He's high up on my list only because it seems like somehow he's undervalued in drafts, which for a young player in Boston who's done what he's been able to do so far as a minor leaguer and in the early part of his major league career, I'm just surprised that he doesn't cost more.
He's a sleeper. He is. He is a true sleeper because, and the only reason I think it's happening, DVR, you'll see it change after spring training when we see who their outfield is. There's just so many outfielders there in Boston. How many at-bats is he going to get? If Pedroia gets hurt, does he play second base? You know, there's just a lot of questions around Mookie Betts, but for me, he plays every day in that lineup, and he is a sleeper. He's on my one of my three sleepers. You bet.
I mean, it's a thing, too, where it's like he's not a sleeper in that no one's heard his name, but he's a sleeper in terms of he's just undervalued. I guess that's the more appropriate word I would use to describe some of the players, at least in this group.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, Gregory Polanco's like that for me, too. And I know last year the numbers upon promotion were not at the level people were expecting. His AAA numbers were amazing. Again, this guy just turned 23 in September, still very young. I think the batting average is going to be there. You're going to get some pop. You're going to get some steals. 30 steals between AAA and Pittsburgh last year. 14 homers, 101 runs scored, 84 runs driven in. No longer looking over his shoulder at Travis Snyder. Maybe he's a 265, 270 hitter this year, but I think he's going to be a good five-category contributor with that full season's worth of starting at bats in right field.
Now, don't get me wrong, and I'm going to qualify what I'm going to say. I like Gregory Polanco. I don't think this is it yet. I think next year you're going to see Gregory Polanco come to fruition. I think he's still going to scuffle some. I think he's not going to play as much as you think he is, and I think there could be some trouble. But next year, no doubt in my mind.
Do you think there's a possibility as a left-handed bat the Pirates could rest him against lefties? Yes. And that could it's still a big side of the platoon, though, so I think there is a lot of opportunity for volume, even if they do go that route. A couple other names on my list. Carlos Beltran. You don't think of him as a sleeper because he's been around forever, but the price is way down. He tried playing with an elbow injury last year, had surgery, going to have a chance to DH. I like him in that park, and he's just a year removed from some pretty big numbers with St. Louis. What do you think about Beltran this year?
I don't, because there's just too many DHs on that club, and I don't think he can play the outfield. I like Garrett Jones at DH. I think A-Rod's going to DH. Beltran some. Just not enough at-bats at DH, and he's going to have to play the outfield, which he won't do well. I'm not on Beltran this year. I mean, I like him, but he's not in that list for me.
I think the Yankees are going to sell A-Rod to NASA as an experimental projectile of some kind, and I don't think A-Rod's even going to be part of the equation once the season starts in some capacity. I don't know how the Yankees are going to make him go away. Come up with your own creative solution to figure that out, but I think Beltran's going to be able to get 450, 500 at-bats this year as long as he's healthy, and I think right field's still going to be an option for him as long as his elbow is fully healthy.
That's a lot of at-bats for him. I can't be with you on that, DVR. I don't see it.
I think the other factor here, though, is that Mark Teixeira could easily get hurt, and then there's plenty of room for playing time for Jones, Beltran, maybe A-Rod if he's still there. I don't think playing A-Rod's a priority for the Yankees right now, even though they owe him a boatload of money still over the next few years. I got two more names for you, Bernie, and we'll get some of your sleepers, too. Steven Sousa, power, speed, batting average, has all the tools, finally getting an opportunity to be an everyday player at the big league level in Tampa. I think maybe the batting average comes down as he gets his first prolonged exposure to big league pitching, but I think there's a chance he goes 20-20 and hits near the middle of that lineup.
I definitely agree. I am a big fan. I saw a lot of him. The guy can play. He's getting a chance to play. Don't give up on him early. Stick with him. That's a good call, DVR. Good call.
Last outfield sleeper I have before we get to your part of the list, Bernie. I have Oswaldo Arcia still as a sleeper. I know he struck out a lot again last year, but even coming off of a wrist injury last year and a tendon issue in his hand, still hit 20 home runs and just 410 trips to the plate. This guy has a ton of raw power. Hitting in target field does not impact him in that regard. I mean, this is a guy that can crush the ball no matter where he's playing. if he can just figure a couple of things out with that plate discipline, strike out a little bit less. Maybe he's a 245, 250 type hitter, but I think there's 25 to 30 home run power in that bat already, maybe even more in the distant future.
Very possible. I don't like the club. I don't like the park, but you're right. His bat can overcome both of those factors. He's, you know, not a bad call. Yes, not a bad call.
So who are some of the other sleepers you're keeping an eye on here this spring?
Well, Betts was on my list, but here are my other three. Kevin Kiermaier, I think, is going to break out. He's known basically as a tremendous defender. I think he's got more in his bat than people realize, and I think he's going to play and play and play. He's going to get his uniform dirty. He's going to steal bases, knock in runs, score runs. You're going to hear from this guy.
I don't have him in my top 350 overall, so I'm not on Kevin Kiermaier right now, but the fact that you like him will probably lead me to evaluate him again and try to figure out what I really expect from him. But as of right now, I mean, he's on my radar, and that I know he'll get a decent amount of playing time, but I do have questions about the bat because he really hasn't hit that much in the minor leagues. Does steal bases, though. I think he's going to give you cheap speed no matter what.
That's right. He is a source of cheap speed. I like that because you're not paying anything for him. He's going to be a $1 player, especially, you know, if I'm up against guys like you, it's a $1 guy.
Yeah, I think.
And I'll take him for a buck.
In the stake league, you probably get him for a buck, maybe two at most. But then again, you probably have to open with two to get him at two.
Number two, or the next guy on my list, is J.D. Martinez. I think there's a lot more from where that came from. Everybody missed on him except the Tigers. Everybody had a chance to get him when he was cut loose by Houston. The Tigers took him. He's going to be in a platoon probably. This guy can play. And J.D. Martinez is going to break out. He broke out last year. He's going to add to that this year.
I think Martinez, the interesting thing I read about him, it was an article in one of the Detroit papers, and I can't remember which one, but upon arrival to Detroit, once he got promoted from AAA Toledo, Miguel Cabrera was in a slump. And just being around some of the veteran hitters, Victor Martinez, Cabrera, Kinsler, some of those guys, that seemed to have an impact on Martinez, at least just based on some comments he had made this offseason. It helped him become a better hitter, just being in a different environment around some experienced guys that have had a lot of success. And the thing that stood out to me the most looking at his spray chart is that he was hitting the ball all over the field last year.
Exactly.
Right. He's not a 315 hitter because he's not going to hit 389 on balls in play. Nobody does that over a full season year after year. But I think he can be a guy that hits for a pretty high average on balls in play. Maybe he's 325, 330 because he can hit a lot of line drives and really square up pitches very often. So I think if you're expecting more like a 260, maybe a 270 average at the high end with 25, 28 home runs and a lot of runs driven in, I think he can do that. I think if you look at Martinez this year versus someone like Nelson Cruz, I'd value them pretty similarly, even though Cruz has a longer track record of success in the big leagues.
I don't think he's going to hit 25 home runs, but I think he's going to give you lots of good, you know, a lot of value for your money, because I still think you're going to get him at a fair price. My last guy is a guy you and I differ on again, and that's Cole Calhoun. I love where he hits in the lineup at the top. I think he plays for a good club. If he's healthy, this is a guy that smacks the ball around. He's a barrel of the bat hitter. He's not going to hit a ton of home runs, but he's going to hit the gaps and he can run. I love Cole Calhoun.
Yeah, I think you're on him. I know a few other people are too, and I'm just against the grain on him, I guess, right now. A little concerned about the second half. The numbers dipped a little bit. One thing that is important to point out, did have an ankle injury last year that limited his chances to steal bases. I think I like him more as a stolen base and run scored guy, as long as he stays atop the order. There's a bad platoon split there. He probably sits against lefties. He's a good player, but a guy that people are overdrafting a little bit in some of the leagues I've been in. So I'll probably get shut out on him, even though I think there's a good skill set there, just not one that I'm willing to pay the current price for.
Yeah, I'll take his upside. So those are my four. And now let's look into our electricity guys, the guys we don't want to touch.
Yeah, so for me, based on price, Calhoun makes that list. Nelson Cruz, who I teased before, makes that list. I mean, you talk about going to Safeco. leaving the AL East in particular. And the weird thing about Nelson Cruz, 25 of his 40 home runs last year came outside of Camden Yards. I would have thought that split was the other way around. But Cruz, to me, you can't draft him as a top 60 player right now because he's not going to hit 30, 35, 40 home runs. He's probably going to hit 23, 25, maybe 27. Yeah, he benefits from going on the road to Texas and Houston, but 81 games at Safeco Field for a right-handed power hitter? No thanks.
I like Cruz more than you do, but I don't know what his price is right now, but I do like him. The poster child for me is none other than Matt Joyce, who has always been my poster child. I don't get it. What am I missing here with Matt Joyce?
I don't think I'll have him anywhere. Maybe an AL only league as a fourth or fifth outfielder, but he's got a job. Yeah, he's not a good defender either. But I think the reason he's got a job in left field is because Josh Hamilton's hurt. Otherwise, he'd be DHing and taking away value from CJ Crone, which is frustrating in and of itself. But definitely not a guy that I'm on this year. And I haven't really been crazy about Joyce for a couple of years. I thought there was a point really early in his career with the Tigers, and then when he first got to Tampa, where I thought there was some short-term value, but even that I think has been more disappointing than rewarding to this point. You know who else made my list in the outfield is Josh Harrison. I don't get it. He's being taken as a top 100 player right now. But why? He's going about 90th overall. I mean,
I'll tell you why. He's going to give you position versatility, and that's great. Anytime you got a guy that's going to be valid at 3-4 positions, who wouldn't want that? That's a nice thing to have.
But he's not eligible at second base in most of my leagues. Most of my leagues,
shortstop, outfield, and he might be by the end of the year at second base as well.
Not shortstop anymore either. I can only use him in third and outfield most of my leagues because he barely played. I don't think he played shortstop at all, but he played 17 at second base.
I saw him play short. Anyway, I thought he would be eligible. Depends on your league.
Yeah, you got to check the settings for sure.
Check your league. See where guys are eligible. And if there's multiple eligibility, that's money in the bank.
I like him a lot more in leagues where you can use him at second base, but in leagues where you can use him at third in the outfield, I don't think he has any business being in the top 200, let alone the top 100. I mean,
how do you really feel about him?
Well, he feasted on fastballs last year. He can't hit breaking balls or off-speed stuff with any power. The BABIP went up by 100 points, but he didn't square up more pitches last year. I see Austin Jackson from last year. That's Josh Harrison this year. You're talking 260, 265, not a lot of home runs. I think he's a single digits home run guy. I think the best categories you can hope for are steals. Maybe he gets you 20. And then maybe if he stays in the leadoff spot longer than he should, he doesn't have very good on base skills, he gets you 70 runs scored. Otherwise, what is there?
I like him more than you do, but I dislike in fantasy my next guy as much as you dislike Harrison, and that's Dominic Brown. How many years have I said this? But he's still there, He's the Energizer Bunny. He just keeps showing up, but I think his batteries are running down. Dominic Brown is electricity.
Yeah, I don't think I'll have anywhere close to a share of Dom Brown, even in National League-only leagues. This year.
He's going to play DVR. He's going to play.
Who else can they use? Sizemore? Jeff Francoeur? I mean, what a joke. They've got to make that Hamels trade and get some outfielders from the Padres. I mean, young outfielders that are good, not just extra guys that are taking up space. One more name I want to throw at you in terms of healthy guys that I'm worried about. Leonis Martin's going really early, Bernie. I've seen projections that have him hitting a dozen home runs. I don't think I see that sort of growth from him in the power categories. And if he leads off, I think he's got a chance of being okay where he's being drafted, but I don't think that's a lock. I think he can get dropped into the bottom third of that lineup again.
Yeah, clearly. There's no doubt. He's an okay player. He's not on my list, but I wouldn't spend a lot of money for him. He's going to get you some stolen bases. The club could be better if Fielder is healthy. That could add a lot. And Beltre is still around there. They're going to score some runs. But I'm not nuts about him. I would take him if he dropped to me, no problem, because he's a good ball player. The last guy on my list is going to shock you, DVR, but I'm not drafting him, and that's Hanley Ramirez.
No Hanley this year, huh?
No Hanley. He's not playing. He's just not going to play. He's something's going to go wrong. He's going to get hurt. I don't know what it is. We're not going to see a full season from Hanley Ramirez. I don't think. I hope so, because he's a great hitter when he's healthy. And when he wants to play, I don't want to pay the price. The price is very high, right?
Yeah, it tends to be. And I've seen him go early second round, so like a top 20 type player. I've got him more like 30 to 40 range. Kind of early 30s is probably the soonest I'd go for him. And it's mostly because he'll carry shortstop eligibility this year. This is the last year he'll have that, presumably,
yeah, that's
with the move
true.
To left field. So I think that to me sort of holds up his value a little bit. But other people like him more than me. So even though I'm not necessarily avoiding him, I could pretty easily get shut out of Hanley Ramirez too. And a lot of it, again, my concerns are health related. It's been a variety of different injuries for him throughout his career. Maybe the move to left field helps him a little bit. Maybe he's a great fit for that park, ripping doubles off the monster. But
yeah, he will do that.
I see a lot of risk there for a player his age, for just considering that track record of health.
Well, he is in the category with Josh Hamilton for me. I just don't see 400 at-bats, let alone 500 at-bats. So if they get the at-bats, they're, especially Ramirez, he's going to be a monster if he gets the at-bats. That's why if you're going to pay the price for Hanley Ramirez, you want him to play. If he were not that expensive, clearly I would take him. But boy, the price you'd have to pay for him in either a draft or an auction, very high.
I do feel like I'd be more likely to get him in an auction than a draft, if that makes sense. I think it's just one of those things where if it's a couple bucks undervalued, I feel better about that than having to choose him versus other players who I have valued similarly in that decision, where I only can have, you know, one player at one specific time. I don't know if that...
We're in an AL only, what do you think he costs?
AL only, you're talking what, 12 teams, like kind of like a grass ball type league?
Yeah,
or...
exactly.
With the shortstop eligibility, AL only, I mean, probably mid-20s, I would think, at least, right? Like 25, 26?
He's going to go close to $40, you watch. He'll be in the mid-30s.
Well, that league's a keeper league, so I guess that there's going to be inflation. There always is, right? So that's a consideration. That kind of throws things off just a little bit. I mean, 12-team, no inflation. Yeah, mid to high 20s is probably as high as I'd go, so I guess that means I'm going to miss out on him.
Yeah, you will. Simply because of that shortstop eligibility, Boston being his home park, the AL East, lots to like if he hits, if he plays. So we'll see.
Just one of those guys. Someone in the room will always like more than me. Bernie, we're going to close things out here. Quick preview of what's coming up next week. We're going to talk about some other players that I'm unlikely to own at the current price. Some non-outfielders will be part of that conversation. Taking a look here, also, we're going to have some toss-ups, some players that are available near each other in terms of ADP right now, which guys we'd prefer. We'll talk about those next week as well. Also, we'll open up the mailbag on Twitter, at ShortHops. Use the hashtag mailbag if you have a question for next week. We can include that as part of our podcast. It can be strategy. It can be, what do you guys think of this player? Anything like that, we'll try to answer that. Again, at ShortHops on Twitter, use the hashtag mailbag. You can follow Bernie on Twitter, at Bernie Pleskoff. You can find me, at Derek Van Riper. If you want to sponsor this podcast, you can contact Shannon at rotowire.com. The views and opinions here of ShortHops are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you'd like to get a free 10-day trial to RotoWire, check out some of our auction value tools, which are very helpful when you're trying to evaluate players. Look at our cheat sheets, our articles. You can do that at rotowire.com/pod. That's rotowire.com/pod. Bernie, before we sign off, what's coming up over at Pipeline and MLB.com this week?
Still doing the On the Cusp series. They continue for 3 more weeks. And people, I've gotten good feedback on it. I appreciate you reading it. Did a blog today about spring training. I'll be starting those blogs now. Derek, what position do you think we'll be doing next week so people can look ahead?
Oh, let's see. We could do middle infielders, we could do corners, or we could do catchers. What do you want to try?
Let's do catchers next week because I'm really struggling with that, but let's do it anyway. That's one position this year, Derek, that has the biggest decline that I've seen in a long time. in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you do have a lot of players really struggling to hit, and as teams are focusing more pitch framing, defense, different aspects of the game that kind of hurt us as fantasy owners and dry up the pool just a little bit. But we'll try to find some guys that present some value during next week's episode. Thanks again for listening to Short Hops. We'll be back with you next week.